the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Yes, pensions, something which we're all actually having to deal with, we're all having to address in so many ways, etc. And there is indeed an awful lot of challenge that's actually out there, a lot of challenges that people are faced with when it comes to coordinating their pensions, etc. We talk about it as being pension literacy. And the person who is going to be our decoder of this particular aspect is the awesomely talented soul from Annuity Ready. That, of course, is wonderful Sarah Lloyd. How are you, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm good, Alex. Thank you. How are you doing?
Okay, but obviously I was just ahead of this piece, actually checking my own pension details, etc. a few days ago. I've got a few years to go, shall we say, but you know, you're always checking that those are there. And because I'm part of a scheme within education where basically the money is paid in from that point of view, thankfully it's not something I've fretted unduly about over the last 3 or 4 decades. However, there are issues that people obviously need to be aware of in terms of portfolio careers, in terms of how things have been developed. What are the key areas that folk really need to be very much aware of when they're listening to you, to yourself and this particular item?
I think that the main issue that we've uncovered with the research that we've done is that there is a real kind of feeling of being overwhelmed and a bit of anxiety, really, when it comes to planning for retirement. And even though we have seen in the research that there is a bit of a difference if you were privately educated versus state school educated, that feeling of being overwhelmed and a bit anxious is kind of is irrelevant regardless of your background. Over half of people feel that they'll trying to navigate a complex minefield when they're preparing for retirement. We're trying to do something about that with the research that we've done to give people access to easy to understand tools and tips and jargon busters to help people, I guess, feel a little bit more empowered than they do today and a bit more confident than they do today.
Indeed, and that's one of the key areas that we see. I mean, you mentioned the private state school gap from that point of view. I mean, there is this human nature, though, that some folk just feel as though whenever they see numbers, they almost go into a catatonic trance. You know, it's something which doesn't really connect. They hear an awful lot of negative news stories coming about pension mis-selling schemes, mis-sold aspects from that point of view. And understandably, being creatures of nervous habit, etc., tend to panic. So is that attempts to actually bridge that gap that you're developing with respect to enhancing getting Britain pension ready, will that actually take a kind of step-by-step, hold us through the hand mechanism to actually say, okay, this is what you need to be doing, this is what you need to be paying in, and so on?
Yeah, and that was kind of the point of some of the, I guess the content that we put onto the new website, some checklists, some jargon busters, some helpful, I guess, direction to people that can tell you more, whether that's a unbiased, you can get referral to financial advisors, or PensionWise, which is a government service. If you're over 50 or over, it's a free impartial service that you can talk to get a bit more detailed advice. So we're supporting with kind of breaking down the basics, giving people that, you know, that first step from a confidence perspective, and then helping guide them to find out more from the right places.
Over half of those surveyed said that navigating the pension scenario is a bit like going across a minefield in so many ways. Yeah. Share with us your own experience, Sarah. Is it something that you've basically said, I've never had any trouble with pensions whatsoever, I've always been spot on, etc.? Or are there times when in your own journey you thought, I don't quite know what that means?
Yeah, well, until 3 years ago when I started working for Annuity Ready, I didn't actually know what an annuity was. And that's one of the products that's an option for people, depending on how they want their pension pot to be sort of paid out to them once they retire. And I've worked in financial services for 20 years. So if I don't know what some of the product jargon is, then if you haven't worked in financial services, then, you know, you're in a, I guess, more of a tricky spot. So yes, I'm one of the ones that probably needs to be a little bit more aware, but certainly getting closer to the pension products over the last 3 years, it's made me more aware and made me more active than I was previously.
And we talk about annuities, we talk about ISAs, we talk about all sorts of other areas that are actually out there in terms of offering things, etc. There seems to be a plethora of agencies offering advice, etc. Best place to go, presumably, to actually start deconstructing this would be your own annuity website, I would have thought.
Obviously, we will say that. We're starting with a place where we want people to just, like, say, to start to take those first steps, start with the basics. You know, what are the products? What are the different pension types? Trying to break down some of the jargon. And then there is some content on the site. But if you want to know more and kind of get into more detail, there's some kind of pointers as to who to talk to, whether that's PensionWise, whether that's speaking to a financial advisor and finding one, or other sources that you can use to find out more yourself. So just taking that time to do a bit of research. I think that taking that first step to get past the fear, to then hopefully have some confidence to take control, really.
And undoubtedly, you're into that situation where everybody is unique. Everybody wants to retire at a different age. Everybody will want to retire on a certain level of income, which they would deem presumably as comfortable. Also, there are concerns about where the state sector pension is actually going and how much that would actually be worth and so on. Are the kind of standard advice points that we've taken over the years, really, which is little and often is better than irregular and sporadic when you're actually dealing with saving for pensions?
I guess it's the devil's in the detail, as it is with these things. But I think if you've got the option to contribute to a work scheme, whether if you're lucky enough that to be in the public sector, or if you've got an employer that's putting contributions to match yours, then make the most of that, because you're getting money for nothing in effect, because your employer's potentially matching yours. And the sooner you start putting into those schemes, the longer your money will have to grow, hopefully, assuming the stock market's kind to you and the investment that you've got in there. So.
Yes, the old notion of stocks and shares going up as well as down. We won't go there in that particular instance, but that's a whole other aspect. Sarah, any closing thoughts that you have in terms of pension preparedness and literacy?
I think for me, it's about how can we support people to take those first steps to get ready and to get pension ready. And hopefully our website will allow people to do that and to start to take control, really, of their financial future.
Sarah, it's been awesome connecting with you, good self, today. Can you just give us the website that people can go to find out details about Annuity Ready?
Yep, it's getpensionready.com.
Sarah Lloyd from Annuity Ready and Get Pension Ready. Huge thanks and have a great day.
You too. Thank you, Alex.
The Queen Killer is still out there.
Everyone is scared. He's a murderer.
He's a monster.
He's perfect. Hey, boss.
No. Who are you?
The name's Nimona. Your sidekick has arrived.
I don't need a sidekick.
Every villain needs a sidekick.
I'm not a villain. The real villain is still out there, and I do need help.
And then, who do you want to kill first?
What?
Look, I can help you, but promise me you won't freak out.
Why would I trust you?
Promise!
I promise!
Even when you see the horn?
Horn!
Promise!
I promise, I will not freak. Oh.
This is the part where you run.
They call me Hell. They call me Stacy.
You're a shapeshifter.
They call me Hell.
Monster attack.
They call me Jane.
Monster attack.
That's not my name.
You did that on purpose.
You catch on quick, boss.
That's not my name.
Something, something, something. We win.
I'll miss the catch if they call me the ball.
If anyone can find them, it's me.
They call me Hell. They call me Stacy.
Ambrosius really thinks I'm a murderer.
That's not my name.
You got betrayed by someone you trusted. Because once everyone sees you as a villain,
that's not my name.
That's what you are.
Do you think he saw us?
Yes.
Why are you running around with a monster? Don't call her that.
The world kicks you around sometimes. But together, we can kick it back.
Mona is smart, kind, and sophisticated.
That guy just beat his armor. Oh, I like where this is going.
Let's break stuff.
Promise, I'm your official sidekick forever and ever. No take backsies.
Can you just be you?
I don't follow.
None of this makes sense.
Look, boss, it's simple. If you like something, thumbs up. If you don't like it, thumbs down. Who has four thumbs and is really great at liking stuff?
And I'm biting on my tongue, and I keep stalling and keeping it together. People around gotta find something to say now. Holding back every- did they forget my name? Aim, aim, aim. They call me Help. They call me Stacey. They call me Her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. They call me Quite, but I'm a diet. Mary Jo Lisa, always the same. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. I'll miss the catch if they throw me the ball. I'm the last trip standing up against the wall. Keep
be your sidekick, because at the end of the day, sidekicks are vitally important in every sense of the word. Natasha Wanton, and we've just heard, of course, because I wanted to play the full soundtrack of Ting Ting's You Know My Name, That's Not My Name, etc., because it features obviously in the soundtrack too, of course, Nimona. But share with us this little take on how, yes, people can be fine souls and heroes and heroines in their own way without necessarily being born to the privilege.
Exactly. Well, I've waited a little while to sort of review this one, and having watched it now, I'm really sad that I didn't watch it sooner because it came out back on Netflix in June last year. And it sort of there was a couple of trailers that played, and I thought, I'm not sure. But my husband finally put Twisted Me Arm, and we watched it today. And oh, was I glad he did! It's going to be a bit of a I'm going to get excited in this review, so I'm going to have to pace myself slowly because I really love this one, and you can probably tell the score that's coming. But it's based on the science fantasy graphic novel of the same name by N.D. Stevenson, and it was originally published online back in 2012, and then later became a print edition in 2015. And at the time of it becoming a print edition, it started having talks to become a movie. And various studios bought it and didn't buy it. And then eventually, back in 2022, they finally decided to do something about it. And Netflix picked it up and got the rights to release it the following year. So, been a long time coming, and it was definitely worth the wait. It's only 99 minutes of running time, but they pack a lot into it. I will go through the plot briefly, and then I'll sort of dissect what I love about it a little bit after. So, the citizens of a medieval futuristic kingdom are protected by the Institute of Elite Knights, established by the legendary heroine Glorith, and who vanquished a great black monster and enclosed the kingdom within a high wall 1,000 years ago. You can see the metaphors coming already. Ballister Boldheart, along with his fellow knights, is about to be knighted. The trouble is, good old Bal is a commoner, and he's the first of his kind to become a knight because normally you have to become from a distinguished household to become a knight, and the public is a little bit wary, and he's not sure what reception he's going to get when he goes up to be knighted, but up he goes with the support of the Queen, and unfortunately, right after he gets knighted, he manages to kill her. But he claims that he had nothing to do with the assassination attempt. So somebody's clearly framed him. Who's framed him? What happens next? Well, as an outcast, he runs into the very wonderful, very obscure Nimona, who decides to march into what she's decided is his evil lair and proclaim herself his sidekick. There's all sorts of comedic sort of. I love the little chemistry, like the little back and forth, like chemistry that they two had. I know it's animated, but you could tell that the voice actors on this one had a really good time just throwing it out into the universe with the script on this one. She agrees to help him prove his innocence and incites quite a lot of chaos along the way. I love this movie. I feel like this was the breath of fresh air that I needed to start my cinematic viewing for 2024. As I said, the voice acting in it is brilliant. The chemistry between the different characters is really, really good. The music choices, as we've heard a little bit already, the music choices just captured the whole mood of it. I thought that it was nice that it sort of played along lines that you could relate to with the plot. But it wasn't done so in a way that was cliche. It surprised you with the plot, even though it felt familiar and comforting in a way, and open and inviting. It wasn't cliche in what it did. I know that the sort of outcast vibes have been done quite a lot before, but I felt like this looked at it in a different way and sort of inverted what we did, much the way similar to, I suppose, what Megamind did.
Yeah, and the Lion King deals with the outcast as well. So even on that sort of basis alone, you have an outcast lion cub. So it's all
You
there. But
do. But I felt like this was quite a fresh take on it. And clearly the critics agree because it's got 94% on Rotten Tomatoes with critics' views, and it's got a general average score of 8 out of 10. Yeah, I would thoroughly recommend it. I'm gonna push to a 10 to this one, guys. I don't push to a 10 very often,
This is
but
true.
I'm pushing to a 10. It was Everyone needs to see this. The metaphors, like the messages, everyone just needs to see this movie. This is a good unifying film message that needs to get out to everyone.
I would concur. Fia van den Bogaert in the Netherlands. Have you caught this as yet, or is it something you're going to say now that Natasha's given it a 10? Clearly, I will have to.
I mean, exactly that. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm very curious now, and I always love an underdog and to root for him, so I'm very eager to watch it now.
Very much within the Dutch psyche, I suppose. Anna Teodora, Koskinen, I know you're in the process of watching this. Have you reached the end? Are you agreeing with Natasha's statement?
I have like 15 more minutes out of it, but it was absolutely wonderful. When Natasha said at like 6 a.m. today about the movie, that's when I started watching it because I wasn't sleeping. And I did not finish it but it was such a good movie. I did not expect for it to be an animation at first, and when I opened Netflix and saw that, I didn't know what to believe. But from the beginning, with the introduction from 1,000 years ago and everything, it was so good. And I like even the second storyline between him and the Golden Boy. It is just, I don't know, it's funny that it somehow relates to what we were talking about last week, but at the same time, in a bit of a more a happy note, I'd say. I don't know. It was, and the dynamic between him and Imona, who was, I don't know. At first, I thought she was the kind of kid, let's call her, that had some issues and just wanted to find someone that accepts her and loves her. But throughout the movie, I just realized that somehow she was the one supporting him, and I'm not gonna say that she was the parent in some cases, but she was the mature one that was able to take some of the decisions that he was too emotionally involved to take them. And I don't know, it was just an interesting dynamic altogether. And I don't know, it was really nice watching it.
A unanimous thumbs up then. Can it persuade Richard Fitzwilliams to make this one of those very, 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 very rare occasions where he will actually watch an animated movie?
I really hope you will.
I love Natasha's enthusiasm for it. I will certainly say that. It is unfortunate that my appreciation of the animated is pretty limited, I have to admit.
It's up for an Oscar, Richard.
Yeah, exactly. Oscar nominated, Academy Award nominated. Surely he would actually work on that process alone. I don't know. Maybe his heart has actually become frozen by looking at too many movies, of musicals, of films. Last week, of course, we were looking at the movie version of a musical version of Mean Girls. Now we have produced by Steven Spielberg, who many thought should have had an Oscar for his incarnation of the dramatization in 1985. Of this book, because it's got incest, it's got rape, it's got abuse, it's got all of those boxes being ticked and so on. And of course, it's got Whoopi Goldberg as well in both sides of the thing. It's got a cracking musical soundtrack as well. Richard, are you going to go for Color Purple then?
Today, our teacher taught us about a place called Africa. She say our mamas come from Queens over there. That means that we royalty.
I don't need you to love me.
Afternoon. I need me a wife.
Even if we have to part, you and me, us have one heart.
I don't need.
Get off my land!
You.
I'll rat you every day!
Daddy!
Nothing but death can keep me from it!
Oh, Miss Seeley!
You must ain't got no kinfolk around these parts.
All I had was my sister. She was the only one ever loved me.
Gonna be some changes made.
Put it on. This ain't me.
Hush.
We need to look like we belong.
Let's see this smile and color.
Ooh, sweet and loving God.
Showing my heart to the folks that are close to God.
Now we're talking.
Seeley. We are more than just kings and queens. We are at the center of the universe. Oh, yes, I am.
Well, based on the Alice Walker novel, yes, you're right, of course, Alex. Going back to 1985, the film was especially memorable for one most unfortunate thing. It was nominated for 11 Oscars and it didn't win any. This has never happened before or since. Very strange. Spielberg is, as Oprah Winfrey, who appeared in the original, is a producer, one of the co-producers, directed by Blitz Baz Awule. And in 1999, in Georgia, teenager Seeley, played by Fantasia Barrino, lives with her sister Nettie and an abusive father. There's no question here. I mean, there's some pretty brutal scenes. The father's Alfonso. He rapes her. She gets pregnant twice and he takes the children away. And we discover subsequently what has happened to them. And Alfonso forces her to marry a local farmer and a father of three, Albert Mr. Johnson, played by Coleman Domingo, who we were praising in Rustin, recently by Rustin. In fact, Domingo comes into the segment I'm doing on the 44th London Critics Circle Film Awards, as he got a special award, the Derek Malcolm Award, named after the noted film critic. So when Mr. tries to molest Nettie, she, played by Halle Bailey, as opposed to Halle Berry, by the way, she moves into Mr.'s farmhouse, but he exiles her. And subsequently, she promises that she's going to be in contact with Seeley. In 1917, Mr.'s son Harpo marries the defiant Sophia, played by Danielle Brooks, who's nominated for an Oscar. And again, there's a split when he's violent. And then we meet the jazz singer Shug, played by Taraji P. Henson, always a personality to reckon with. She comes around to perform, and then there's a certain amount of violence and fracas when Harpo has, or the two women that he's seeing, start clashing. And again, they discover the African connection with the children who were taken away early, which we see in a flashback sequence. Then Safari is called by the mayor's wife to be a maid when she refuses and fights against it because of the racism. She's imprisoned. She's subsequently released, forced to become a maid. And then we move to the 1940s, where Mr. is confronted with the way he's been abusing women. This is, in fact, it's a tribute to the feminist African-American vision, where lives undergo such tremendous trauma through racism. And of course, we see through the a form of patriarchy. What particularly carries this movie is it has a very impressive cast. And whereas, I mean, the music, it's a musical, I thought it worked. I wouldn't say that it's particularly outstanding. But what is specifically emphatic here is the feminist side of it. We have Fantasia Barraro, Halle Bailey, Danielle Brooks, and Taraji P. Henson, and they basically carry the movie. I thought that climactically, by the way, Mr. gets off rather easily, given
it's a musical, Richard. You've always got to have a kind of happy ending in a musical, surely.
Well, there are those, he becomes a pretty pathetic drunk, and there are those who could have wished a worse fate on him, seeing the way he's behaved throughout the film, Alex. But yes, I mean, it's been generally praised by critics, and I'd certainly go along that with the fact that because of a particularly strong cast, I think that it succeeds.
So I'm suspecting an 8, basically, from yourself, Richard. Natasha, 7. There we are. Natasha, 1 for yourself, because it is a musical. And of course, it's got lots of toe-tappingly wonderful numbers, despite the subject matter.
Yeah, that's the contrast you've kind of got to work through, isn't it? I mean, the subject matter is very, very bleak in a lot of ways. And you contrast
I'm currently drafting Ukraine, the musical, as a possible sort of way of actually building on the Tucker Carlson interview.
Well, do you know what I mean? Like, it's that sort of thing. You wouldn't necessarily associate. Well, I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I know Les Miserables, but I don't know.
They're trying to kill
maybe...
Siren, the musical. That's another long.
maybe. But, I mean, yeah, Les Mis works, so who knows? I've got two questions, Richard, if you wouldn't mind. Firstly, with the time jumps, there's a lot of time jumps in the story. Do you think the time jumps work smoothly? And my second question would be, this is a very well-known, like, novel. This is a very well-known, very well-done...
Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, Natasha.
Exactly. What is worth seeing this version compared to the other versions? Those are my two questions.
First, second question, I can't. I didn't actually see the 1985 version, so I can't. It's hard to judge it. I didn't hear the first question.
The first question was, are the time jumps done in a way that is easy to follow and smoothly?
Oh, time jumps, yes, roughly. Again, the strength of this is more the performances, in my opinion, than the story. At least that is broadly my take on it. It's the musical numbers, they add, obviously, there is this terrific African-American sense of rhythm that you've always associated.
To me, it's as wonderful as Wonka, musically speaking.
Well, I'm not sure that I'd have compared it exactly to Wonka. Wonka had rather much chocolate in it for me, but I cannot dispute that it certainly had pizzazz and certainly some magical colours, and it had Timothy Chalamet.
Can't believe that Richard hasn't seen the 1985 classic by Steven Spielberg. Shocking in extremis. But Fear van den Bogart, what about yourself and The Color Purple, the musical?
I'm very shocked right now. No, I did watch the 1985 version, and I just, it's such a terrible, and how she has to endure 4 decades of abuse, not just mentally, but also physically. And I love that movie. And I'm not sure if the musical will add to the story, because it's already such a beautifully written story. And the movie in 1985 was also very beautiful, and with Whoopi Goldberg and Oprah Winfrey. So I'm not sure if I will like this movie, but I mean, we also have the 1985 version, so I can always come back to that. So I will watch it.
And the stage play musical was very successful. Of course, it might just be that Richards has fallen into the classic transatlantic trap of spelling C-O-L-O-U-R as opposed to the absolutely correct C-O-L-O-R, which is obviously critical in terms of this particular sort of area. Anyway, Anna, what about yourself? The Color Purple, 1 for yourself? Or is it a case of, look, I'm having enough trauma in my own life without actually sort of opening up even more now?
It does sound like a captivating movie, but I have to agree with Fia now that I do know the 1985 version with Oprah Winfrey and Danny Glover. And I think it's just what I've always said, that they are remaking old movies into new movies, and they're trying to make them better and somehow to add things from now and to change a bit of things. And I believe it's a good one. And the female leads, I had a look at the actresses, and they are really good. I haven't watched it. I don't know if I'm going to watch this one, but I know it's a really good movie. And at least the last one. So if I'm going to watch it, I will let you know on which one I think it's better.
Well, indeed. As I say, Anna also sharing some of her thoughts about the David Lynch 1984 incarnation of Dune versus the Denis Villeneuve Dune Part 1, with Dune Part 2 obviously literally just around the corner. Jeffrey Wright, of course, is another star who's been nominated for an Academy Award, and quite rightly so, because you might ultimately say it's all about fiction and getting on down with the right groove. Ain't that right, my man, Richard, in all sorts of ways?
Jeffrey Wright, in fact, it's very interesting with the Film Critics Circle Awards. I was chatting to him and also the director and writer of this movie, American Fiction. This is something I was looking forward to. Indeed, I have to admit, I turned up at a preview screening and I didn't check it was booked out. And it's rather nice this is happening to movies because there's a lot of interest in this movie. It's very, very well scripted. It is a send-up of white hypocrisy who lionize black stereotypes, and it uses some pretty tough devices, including, it has to be said, the M-word and the F-word.
But it's not a musical, thank goodness, Richard.
In the version, not yet, no. Indeed, we meet Thelonious Ellison, known, of course, as Monk. Now, he's an African-American academic. He's highly intelligent and sensitive, and his novels receive critical praise. The trouble is, they don't sell. And the reason is, according to his agent, they are not, in inverted commas, black enough. And also, he's outrageously frank with his students on race issues, and this causes problems, it upsets people, and the university put him on temporary leave. So that forces him to go home and to Boston and also to meet his family. His sister rather tragically dies after she has a heart attack. Then his mother, played by veteran actor Leslie Uggams, has Alzheimer's, and also he has a neighbour, a very attractive neighbour, Caroline, played by Eric Alexander, who's starting to take an interest in him. But the problem is, with his mother needing help and his brother turning up, Sterling K. Brown plays Cliff. He's gay. He would not admit this before, but he's also a junkie and he's not very reliable. Somebody has to pay the bills for his mother. His novels aren't selling. He thinks he's going to do something outrageous, something that's going to sell. He has to. What will that be? Well, in fact, what he does is something absolutely appalling. He decides, as a send-up, he's going to write the most grotesque black stereotypes, figures who he thinks will appeal
like
to...
Like Springtime for Hitler in The Producers.
Yeah, that sort of thing, exactly, it is. So when his agent starts getting him a deal, and he simply can't bear the thought of all this, he decides to change the title. So he decides to call it the F word. Does that put them off? Well, of course it doesn't. And indeed, it leads to... So he writes it under a pseudonym. This is most important. So, and his agent is also behind the idea that he pretends to be some form of convict.
Gangster, G-A-N-G-S-T-A, Richard. That's what you're looking
for. Exactly. And also, there's an interesting novelist who's Sintara Golden, who is in fact playing on these stereotypes and getting not only interest from students, but also her books are selling. So he realizes this is onto a good thing, as his agent does. But on the other hand, he wants desperately to kill it because he's afraid it's going to destroy his reputation. So what happens? And indeed, how does this play out? Could there be interest, cinematic interest in this?
Of course, it make millions.
And it could, who knows, make a lot of money. This is a movie that's very, very funny. It has a flaw, and the main flaw is the character and the subplot linked to the brother Cliff. Fine enough performance by Sterling K. Brown, but it's not as well written as the rest of it. But I was in fits of laughter through this movie because, of course, it's very funny. I mean, when, for example, Monk is asked to be a judge of a literary prize, Can you just imagine? Of course, they don't know he's written the book.
How did you come to write this book?
What really struck me was that too few books were about my people. Where are our stories? Where's our representation?
Would you give us the pleasure of reading an excerpt?
Yo, Sharonda, girl, you be pregnant again? If I is, Ray Ray is gonna be a real father this time around. Thank you.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular.
Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write.
I just want to rub their noses in it.
I'd be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack. You said you wanted black stuff. That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
We sold your book.
No.
We believe Mr. Lee has written a bestseller.
It's a joke.
The most lucrative joke you've ever told.
Now, is Stagg a pseudonym?
Yeah.
Mr. Lee can't use his real name.
Is this based on your actual life?
Yeah, you think some bitch-ass college boy can come up with that?
No, I don't.
Can I ask what you were in for? Was it murder?
You said that, not me.
They ran 300,000 copies.
Your books changed people's lives.
They're offering $4 million for the movie rights.
Yes! The dumber I behave, the richer I get. Gone too far.
Stagg R. Lee is still on the run from authorities.
You haven't done anything. It's not like they can arrest you.
Wish I could go back to not selling books.
Is it bad to cater to people's tastes?
People want to love you, Monk. You should let them love all of you.
There's already so much buzz because of the movie deal.
Michael B. Jordan is circling.
We want to put him on the cover in one of those scarves, I guess you would call them, tied around his head.
A do-rag?
Do-rag, that's it. Do-rag and a tank top with the muscles showing.
Yeah, something called the fire department.
We're thinking we can get it out in hydrogen tank.
The F-word book becomes part, of course,
the Fitzwilliam's book, quite literally, which is why you're in fits of laughter.
Absolutely, and of course the book wins, and what happens then? And what could be happening? And what about the romance with his neighbour? When he gets pretty appalled, after all, when she buys the book and enjoys it. So what sort of a person could she possibly be? This is starting to make him misanthropic, and you can just imagine it. But it's Jeffrey Wright's performance. It's a marvellous, very insightful. And the script, bar the subplot, which is a pity, is absolutely spot on. It is very, very funny, but these are serious issues, and it's grotesque the way the African-American experience is stereotyped.
Richard, I've suggested for many a year you should actually use the pseudonym Fitzwilliam San, pretend to be Japanese, and write about the Hiroshima disaster from a Japanese point of view. That's going to be a winner, surely.
Which disaster?
Hiroshima. That's, and then we can have a musical, which would be a bomb.
Well, there's a book, there's a film here coming called Plantation Annihilation, Alex. I think that's the sort of thing that you're thinking of.
Yeah, exactly. Natasha, American fiction, I mean, surely the entire continent is built on fictions, according to the Native Americans. So what difference is that then?
I think my eyes, I've got to find my eyeballs. They are currently on the floor after the last 5 minutes of what I've listened to. I'm just going to pop them back in my head. This does sound really interesting and juicy. Like, it sounds like there's a lot of, you're going to be watching some people who are going to be quite uncomfortable on the screen. And sometimes those movies are really, really good, and you get kind of like a good satisfactory wiggle out of them. I feel like this is going to be worth watching. It feels, yeah, it's an interesting, I can see it from an interesting sort of political satire-y kind of way from what it's coming across. And I do sometimes like those slice of life-y elements. So I think I will be watching this one.
And it does feature, of course, as we've noted, Felix Leiter from the Daniel Craig era of James Bond, which is always good in terms of Jeffrey Wright's position. Likewise, his role within Westworld. Fia, one for you?
Well, I think it was a great choice for this film to make it quite a funny film, because then people will watch it, and it has such a great message. Because I mean, I personally wasn't aware that there is such a stereotype that if you're an African American writer, that you have to write about this topic, because that otherwise people won't read your book, which is crazy.
Like Alice Walker and the Color Purple all over again, isn't it? Really,
almost, yeah. So I think it's great that they made this a funny film, because, I mean, I will definitely be watching this, but then most people will be watching it and will understand that, like, this is not okay. This is not how the world works, and how, like, if you're African-American in the U.S., it's not really your life. Like, for some people, it may be, but it's not for everyone.
Day in, day out, Anna is faced with the notion that once she says she's from Romania, oh, have you seen any vampires recently? It's not true. Not everybody in Romania is a vampire. I'm just saying. Anna, is this one a challenge of stereotypes that you think, yes, American fiction, that is one for me?
Well, in my 300 years of life, I've never seen a vampire. But I do think I will watch this movie. And it does sound quite funny. And I think, again, as Fia said, and as everybody before has said, reducing people to some kind of stereotypes and then trying to put some comedy in it just to send a message, I think it's a really good way of reaching the audience. So to me, that sounds quite funny. And after we close today, I think I'm going to start watching it.
Oh. So Richard, there we are. Are you going for a 9 for this, or is it even higher?
No, I am going for 8, and I would have gone for 10 if the subplot hadn't been a bit superfluous. Jeffrey Wright's performance, and it is, yes, it's very, very funny, but it's a serious undercurrent, as I've mentioned.
The domestic challenges, obviously not floating either your boat nor indeed that of Mark Kermode's. Anyway, moving on, Critics Circle, did you enjoy the whole process?
Yes, and the reason most particularly, you mentioned Mark Kermode, and I mean, he as a host, if you want someone who loves cinema, but you also want someone who's knowledgeable.
And Ricky Gervais isn't available.
You've got someone who's really, really first class. I mean, the 44th London Critics Circle Film Awards, very well arranged by Rich Klein at the Mayfair, which is where it's been for some years, and also very quirky choices. This was most intriguing, because I started to try and bet in my mind what would win the various categories. And a lot of the time I was wrong. I mean, Film of the Year was The Zone of Interest, which is certainly a quirky choice. Foreign language Film of the Year.
And not a musical.
Indeed not. Foreign language film was Past Lives, which I loved, as you will remember. Documentary of the Year. Well, yes, the war in Ukraine and elsewhere. I mean, leading film like 20 Days in Mariupol, it's almost unwatchable. It's so terrifying. And Director of the Year, well, Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. Again, it's quite a quirky choice. Screenwriter, Anatomy of a Fall comes in, which, as you remember, was a 10 out of 10. For me, I thought it was wonderful. Actress of the Year, Emma Stone for Poor Things, was absolutely remarkable. Actor of the Year, Andrew Scott for All of Us Strangers. Now, that is an interesting one, because All of Us Strangers got 9 nominations, which was more than any other film. Not my personal choice, I have to admit, but he was very good. And supporting actress, oh, no surprise there, the Vine, Joy Randolph, playing the cook in The Holdover. Supporting actor, Charles Melton for May December, which we discussed quite a few weeks ago, and which was one of these rather wonderful, quirky surprises. More came through with Breakthrough Performer of the Year, Mia McKenna-Bruce in How to Have Sex, which we discussed again quite a while back, and which I liked, very unusual movie. British-Irish Film of the Year, All of Us Strangers, does so well. Breakthrough British-Irish film, How to Have Sex, and British-Irish performer, the charming Paul Mescal, who's succeeding, well, not Russell Crowe exactly, it's Lucius, who's the son of the wife of Commodus in Gladiator. He's playing Lucius in Gladiator 2. I'm looking forward to that. Young British-Irish performer Lola Campbell in The Excellent Scrapper, and technical achievement, The Zone of Interest, and two awards for excellence. Jeffrey Wright, who we mentioned in American Fiction, and Coleman Domingo, who was in Color Purple, but was especially good, I felt, in Rustin, for the Derek Malcolm Award. So a very successful evening, and given authority by an absolutely remarkable host.
Well, there you are. To say. And certainly an hour which started off with advice for women if they're getting divorced, how to look after their pension rights, very important, and heading through, obviously, a whole range of clear classic lines. I'm currently actually looking on another alternative, which is 20 Days in Mariupol, the musical. I'm sure we could actually look at working on some sort of way forward in which we can actually address some sort of positivity there and have some nice toe-tapping numbers. I might actually get the new director of the Color Purple to actually involve with it, because he had some success with Beyonce, and I think some Beyonce numbers slotted in there could actually be quite useful and indeed effective. For the moment, Natasha Wanton, were you paying attention to the London Critics Circle Awards, or is it a case of, no, I only look at the Academy Awards, so they're the only ones that count, really?
I haven't really looked much at the London, apart from the fact that I knew we were covering it. I wouldn't really, it's not something that's advertised a lot here in our media, I suppose. So it's not something that the average layman like myself, I suppose, would have a lot to do with.
And obviously in the Netherlands, the London Critics Circle Awards, pointless. I mean, let's talk Amsterdam, surely.
Yeah, no, sorry, it wasn't in the media. No,
exactly. Well, that's why it has been now, and Richard has flagged it up, so that even people such as Anna's father in Romania can actually sort of say, ah, yes, that's what it's all about. Excellent.
Exactly.
Okay, two. Anna Coscanell to Thea van den Bogert, to Natasha Wanton, and to Richard Fitzwilliams, huge thanks as ever, and keep watching those movies, musical or otherwise.
Keep rolling by, just trying to keep your head up, lifted to the sky. When you get down, just dance around like you're a child. I'll never let you get too low. Oh. If you could be a I'm not the one to take you down, but I-
this 5'7" guy who's just my type. Like the way he's speaking, his confidence is peaking. Don't like his baggy jeans, but I'ma like what's underneath it. And no, I ain't been to MIA. I heard the Cali never rains, the New York's wide awake. First, let's see the West End. I'll show you to my bedroom. I'm liking this American boy, American boy. Take me on a trip, I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York, I'd love to see LA.